Hello and welcome. My name is Zach Weaver, and I'm the senior pastor at Liberty Vineyard Church. I'm so glad you tuned in to the sermon today. I hope that it blesses, encourages, and challenges you as you begin to explore the abundant life God has for you. If you're in the area, consider joining us for our weekly services, Sunday mornings at 10:30. We have lunch together, free of charge, each week following our service. Everyone is welcome. We're located in the city of Tucker, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta. Directions and other information are available on our website at libertyvineyardchurch.com. If you go through it from beginning to end, the Bible is primarily filled with a lot of history, a lot of historical facts, a lot of dates, a lot of connections, and a lot of things to make sure that we understand how one thing led to another. What is the progression of events that got us to this place? What is the group of people from generation to generation that led to all of these things? And it's recorded throughout the Bible. Now, sometimes it's disguised in big, grand stories, and we get kind of hyper-focused in on this one story, and sometimes it's glossed over with a big sweeping history of this beget that, and this person beget this person, and you look at the dates and you realize, oh, well, like 400, 500 years have passed, and all of these things have happened. But the book primarily is filled with those kind of dates, surrounded by how God has intersected and interacted at each of these points throughout history, recorded basically from the beginning of time up through Jesus' life and his disciples. And the thing that I always am encouraged to think about is, though the Bible has been completed, has been written, these stories, these interactions, this tale that is still being told, that this history is still happening right now, that we're part of it, your parents, their parents, all this thousands of years since, that even though the last pages of the Bible have been penned, this idea of history progressing and a genealogy of events happening and the intersection of God at each of these points has continued up until now and is still continuing and will continue until Jesus comes back. The history of people is a way to understand not only where they've come from, but what's led them to the place that they are. I want to take a look at I was saying that the Bible is filled with these kind of historical and genealogies and events and things that have happened like that. And sometimes they're very broad, and sometimes they're very concentrated. And one such really concentrated moment happens at the beginning of the New Testament. It's the very first thing that we read when we open to our New Testament. It's the genealogy of Jesus. It's the ancestry of Jesus. And if we read through this list, we are going to start to notice. Now, I'm not going to sit and go through this whole list, but if you want to turn there, you can sure look at it. It's Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. This is a record of the ancestors of Jesus the Messiah. And right away, we begin to get some big names that hit in this genealogy. We start to notice Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, King David is in this list. Jesse is in this list. We start to see Hezekiah, the king that brought back the worship of the Lord the way it was supposed to be in his temple. And we see again and again these big names, and it's very encouraging. But what may be easy to miss is that it's also filled with a lot of names that people might want to forget. Names like, well, we have there, it in verse 6, it says Jesse's the father of David and David's the father of Solomon. And then there's a little parenthesis that his mother was Bathsheba, the widow of Uriah. We move back through some of these others. There's just a history of all of good and bad, a mixture of people that succeeded in doing amazing things for God and people that succeeded in doing amazing things in spite of their history. And what we see by the end, though, is that the history doesn't necessarily determine the person. That the history doesn't determine the trajectory of a life. Now, back in these days, writing down the history was the only way you could record it, to sit down and write out the ancestral history, to have it been recorded over time, all that. Nowadays, we have the ability through DNA testing and things like that to go through. There are many websites, there are many services that do this, where you can go back and look at your ancestry, and they'll find out this is part of your history is from this country or from this person, or you have people that were involved in this, and you can go back very easily and see this broad-reaching history of your life and your history of where you came from, where your parents came from, who are you, and where did you come from? And just like Jesus' genealogy, this has both kind of a positive and a negative aspect to it. There are many things that are passed down that we may very much want to escape. And there are other things that we may want to celebrate. I'm part of a generation that did this. Or maybe not. And you look back through the history and it can seem sort of overwhelming. And I could see how for some of the people in this list for Jesus and maybe in our own lives, and I know in my life, it can feel very easy to feel disqualified to be able to do maybe what is set before you to do. Well, we're in a series right now about a man named Gideon, a man who felt extremely disqualified. Last week, we looked at the call of Gideon, and we talked about Gideon having to overcome two major obstacles. The two obstacles were, number one, his view of himself, and number two, his view of God. Because of his view of himself, he says he's the weakest in his family and his clans, the weakest in their tribe, and so... because of his view of himself, he has trouble coming to terms with what the angel is asking him to do. And his view of God is really no better. He doesn't believe God is really going to be with them. He doesn't really believe that God is for them. And so at the end of last week, there was a little bit of a reconciliation. A little bit of hesitation. Not full acceptance, but a beginning, a starting point for Gideon. We talked about that being all that God really needs in our lives. A willingness to say yes. A willingness to say, I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know where, and I don't know why, or any of those facts. But if you say God's with me, I'm in. Today, I want to take us through the next section of Gideon. So if you turn in your Bibles with me to Judges chapter 6, starting in verse 25, this kind of picks up right after Gideon has now gone and made a sacrifice to the Lord and realized that it's actually the angel of the Lord speaking to him. And the angel says, you're not going to die. And so he makes an altar and he calls that altar, the Lord is my peace. And so we pick it up now at verse 25, and it says, that night, and I want you to notice that because we're going to come back to that later. That night, the Lord said to Gideon, take the second best bull from your father's herd, the one that's 7 years old, pull down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole standing beside it. Then build an altar to the Lord your God here on this hill, laying the stones carefully. Sacrifice the bull as a burnt offering on the altar, using the fuel as fuel, the wood of the Asherah pole you cut down. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did what the Lord commanded. He did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. He knew what would happen if they found out who had done it. Early the next morning, as the people of the town began to stir, someone discovered the altar of Baal had been knocked down and that the Asherah pole beside it was gone. In their place, a new altar had been built and had the remains of a sacrifice on it. The people said to each other, who did this? After they asked around and made a careful search, they learned it was Gideon, the son of Joash. Bring out your son, they shouted to Joash. He must die for destroying the altar of Baal and for cutting down the Asherah pole. But Joash shouted to the mob, "Why are you defending Baal? Will you argue his case? Whoever pleads his case will be put to death by morning. If Baal truly is a god, let him defend himself and destroy the one who knocked down his altar." And from then on, Gideon was called Jerubbaal, which means "let Baal defend himself," because he knocked down Baal's altar. Now I want to dig into this a little bit. And this is what we're going to study today. Last week we looked at the two obstacles that he had to overcome. First, his view of himself, and second, his view of God. But today, Gideon has a third obstacle that he has to overcome. He has to overcome his family heritage. He has to overcome his history, his ancestry. So this is a time now with Gideon of testing. And you remember those words, he's that faithful with little will be faithful with much, will be given much more. And so Gideon is asked to do this, what seems like a relatively small thing. But it's not a relatively small thing for Gideon, because there's a lot that's wrapped up in this one simple act. And so we're going to learn today about this idea of overcoming the obstacle of a family heritage, overcoming what might be somewhere down the pipeline that we feel may disqualify us or may keep us from doing what God is asking us to do. The principle that we're going to learn about here is that where you've come from doesn't at all determine where you're going. If you take a look through the people in the Bible, one of the founders of the faith, Abram, is called in very much a similar way to Gideon. If you have the time, we're not going to go over it today, but I would really recommend looking at the Jewish history of Abram. It's a fascinating story. It's way more in-depth than what we get in the Pentateuch in our Bible. But if you go back and look at the ancestry of him, of who his father was, of what the conflict and the interaction was between him and the king at the time, it really helps understand why he is called out of the land of Ur. And that similar calling of that God tells him, "I need you to leave behind all of the things that you've known, all of the things that you've done before. I need you to leave behind all of this other stuff and go to a place where I will tell you." And now we come to Gideon. There's a long line of people that God calls that way. And Gideon is part of them. So in verse 25 and verse 26, God has a challenge and a test. And it begins with the words, "that night." Now I want you to notice that he had already just made a sacrifice, right? It says it was happened earlier that day. He makes this sacrifice. And now it says that night he needs to take a bull to make a sacrifice, right? But in order to make the sacrifice, this time, he has to do something else. Before, all he had to do was bake something and give it to the angel. This time, in order to make the sacrifice, it's not the simple matter of taking the bull and sacrificing it. In this time, he has to destroy the altars in order to not only have a place to put the bull, but to have fuel to sacrifice. So when he's being asked to destroy the altars and make a sacrifice, it's more than just offering something. It's having to destroy something else. So many times in our life when God asks us to do something significant, he doesn't ask us to take a step from where we are to a new place. In order to take that step, there's often something that's standing right there in the way. Something that's right in our path that would prevent us if we are not willing to remove it, to step over it, to destroy it, to burn it down. If we're not willing to get past that, that next step may be right there, but it will not be accessible to us unless we are willing to remove it. This is a necessary step that Gideon has to go through. Not just enough to say, "I made a sacrifice and I know the Lord is my peace." A sacrifice to say, "Now you need to leave behind your old way. Right? It's more than an altar, right? It's not just, it's more than just these old altars to Baal and this Asherah pole. What do those represent? They represent the old way. They represent obstacles to the kingdom of Israel, or to the people of Israel. They represent what they relied on, what they trusted in, what they would make sacrifices to in order for things to go well in their lives. It was their fallback. It was their comfort. It was their place of peace. And it's just like Abram. He says, put your trust in me. Don't be afraid to show it. Don't be afraid to show where your allegiance lies. Now, Gideon is still fearful. He's not yet really comfortable with this whole thing. And he's very fearful of what others might think. So you notice he says he does it when? Out in the open, and he's very bold and very strong. No, he does it under the cover of night. But it's baby steps, right? God doesn't ask us always to just take this giant leap. It's the giant leap is inside. The giant leap was made when Gideon was willing to come out from that wine press and step out and make the sacrifice. That was the giant leap. The giant leap is an internal mindset, a spirit, a heart set that says, I am willing to do what you ask, God. The physical part of it is often in these small little incremental steps that God leads us. But if it doesn't start here, if it doesn't start in the mind and in the heart and in the spirit, those little steps we make don't mean anything. It's got to start first here. And you understand a little bit. I mean, it seems silly to think that there'd be too much fear in knocking down the poles. But if you read down a little bit further, I mean, there's good reason that he's afraid, right? I mean, it doesn't just mean, hey, I knocked those down. Somebody's going to be upset like you broke a vase at home or you ran into your car into something. It's not that. In verse 30, it says, bring out your son because he has to die for doing this. And it's not one person coming. It's the whole town that gathered there. There's a mob that is now surrounded and come after him because he did this. But if you remember last week, it's not a sacrifice if there's not some skin in the game. If it doesn't cost you something, and what God's asking is for just a little more. We talked last week about how the grain offering was such a significant thing because why? He was hiding the grain. They obviously didn't have bundles and an abundance of it to spare. Now it's a little more. That's kind of how God works. He needs a little of us? No. Half, maybe. You see, God wants it all. And we aren't always willing to give it all at once. And so he just asked for that willingness, that first step to say yes, to say, I'll do it. And then he says, okay, I can be trusted, right? You see that I'm here. Now I'm just going to ask you to do a little more. I'm getting ahead of myself in the story, but if you go through the book of, it's not the book of Gideon, but the story of Gideon in Judges, it's an entire story looks like an escalator of events that just keep rising in God's ask of Gideon a little more and a little more, and each time Gideon's just still a little unsure, but he still goes ahead and does it, and it's a little more, and it's a little more, and I can't wait until we get to the end of the story, and we see the culmination of events into who Gideon is transformed into because of his willingness to start with a small thing, but a big yes. And so we get to the point now in the story where Gideon has said yes. He has gone and he has gotten some servants and he's pulled down the Asherah pole. He's broken down the altar to Baal and now he is making the sacrifice. He is doing what was done earlier in secret. Now, I'm not sure if in the light is the right way to say it, but in a public arena. That's a better, it's still, there's not people around, but it's baby steps. We're getting there. But it's a public profession, a public acknowledgement of what God had done, of his commitment. See, all of this before, all of last week was him and the angel. From what it records, there's no one else there. It's Gideon and it's the angel. And he makes this commitment to God, but it's all by himself. It's one of the reasons that baptism for a believer is so important. I know I'm kind of take a little diversion here for a second, but baptism is that public profession of a personal commitment that you make. Now, baptism doesn't save you. The baptism is not the saving. The baptism is the display of I am committing myself. This is a public act so that I'm not just saying, yes, God transformed me, but nobody else can know. It's God transformed me and I want the world to see it. And I'm willing to take this step out. Because when you take that step out on faith, when you make it public, when you do something like what Gideon did, now it's a little harder to take back. Now there's an expectation on you. Now there's a look. Now you have a name. And it may be very different than what it was before. And so Gideon makes this public acknowledgement, but it indicates, right, this split now with the heritage, with the family history, with tradition. What is it Jesus said? I came not to bring peace, but a sword. I came to divide. It's risky. It's scary. But it's a completely necessary step. In his commentary on the story of Gideon, F.F. Bruce, one of my favorite theologians to study for this, points out that the destruction of the idols was necessary for two reasons. One of them was the purifying of Israel. And we kind of talked about that and alluded to that a little bit. But see, it was removing not only the obstacle for him, the thing that was in his way. You remember Gideon's belief was, sir, if God is with us, why is all this happening to us? He doesn't trust that God's there or didn't. And these idols and these poles are proof. It's not only an obstacle for him, but it was an obstacle for those around him. See, these things, these poles, this stuff, it would have been easy for Gideon to make this vow in peace all by himself and then to go about his business doing life and nobody would be the wiser and he would just say, hey, I did this thing. But there was something that was in the way, not only of the path that Gideon, that God had called Gideon to walk on, but there was something that was in the way of all the people that he was getting ready to involve in this process. You see, your calling, the thing that God is asking you to do, may not just be for you. Your calling may be that other people are now going to be involved with you in this. Your calling may involve others as well. And if this stumbling block, he moves it for himself, that's great. But how is everybody else supposed to get to where he is, to get to where God is calling them? See, this is a calling for the whole of Israel, not a calling just for Gideon. And these were a stumbling block. I want to read you an interesting little side note about this. It happens in 1 Peter chapter 2. It's a collection of scriptures that Peter writes to just remind people. I'm placing a stone in Jerusalem, a chosen cornerstone. And anyone who believes in him will never be disappointed. He is very precious to you who believe. But for those who reject him, the stone that was rejected by the builders will become the cornerstone. As the scriptures say, he is the stone that makes people stumble, the rock that will fall on them. And they stumble because they don't listen to God's word or obey it. And so they meet the fate that's been planned for them. See, these idols were stumbling blocks for the people. But we realize, as we read through the story of Gideon, how far gone Israel really is. Because what was the stumbling block for Israel was not, in their eyes, the idol. It was the sacrifice that was made in its place. You see, God had become a stumbling block for them. Gideon tears down the idols and in its place makes a sacrifice to God. And they're upset about that. It's a difficult moment for Israel. It's a real line in the sand that gets drawn at that point. It's interesting to note that at this point, when it's time to face the music of who did it, that Gideon's not around. I think it's good. I like Gideon because he's a person, a real person. He's not one of these larger-than-life heroes that I look at. I mean, you look at the story of David, and it's from the time of my youth, I was, you know, throwing stones at lions and fighting off bears, and now God can... I wasn't fighting any lions when I was a kid. I wasn't fighting bears. I'm pretty sure if I saw a lion, I wouldn't throw rocks at it. I mean, there's like, these people are larger than life, and it's hard to relate sometimes. Gideon's not hard to relate. Gideon does it in secret, and then he's hiding. It's baby steps. And I want you to be encouraged by that. I'm not sure that's the part of the story that always we feel encouraged by, but the encouragement is that he's a real person. He's like you and he's like me. He's not always super confident or sure of what he's going to do. But he does it, just maybe not exactly the way God wants him to do. But it does show how far gone Israel is, that this is the upsetting thing. This is the thing that's really got them. His dad, Joash, is obviously some man of repute, some bigwig in the town. Because, I mean, not only does he have many servants, because Gideon takes, it says, 10 of them. That's a lot of servants. But he now has the authority to not only stand up to the mob, but also call for their death if they're going to defend Baal. See, I think for the mob, there was this expectation. For the rest of the city, there was an expectation of, this is how Gideon should behave. This is how his dad's going to behave. We're going to come to him. His dad's going to send him out because obviously he's wrong. There's this expectation of what he is going to do because of who his father is and who his ancestry is. There's this expectation because of his heritage that this is what's going to happen. Because this is what has always happened. But there's a second part to this commentary. Remember, I said there were two reasons that F.F. Bruce points out. One of them was to purify Israel. The second was to establish Gideon as a leader of some prominence in the community. What was Gideon before? He was afraid and the lowest member of his family and the lowest clan and the tribe and this so on. He was way down on the totem pole. God needs him to rise to prominence, to be a leader that others can gather around. This is a big step. So he's doing it at night. He disappears in the morning. But then something surprising happens. His father steps up. His father steps up and supports him. And that's an amazing step. An amazing step. Your background, your heritage, your family history, in your own life, what is it that you have to overcome? Is it a history of attitude? Is it a history of some kind of belief? Is there history of things maybe physically in your body that make it difficult for you to do what God is calling you to do? All of us have things in our family tree, back in our lives, that we may look at and say, oh, I wish that wasn't there. Maybe we're ashamed of, maybe we're disappointed in, maybe we wish we could change, but there's absolutely nothing we can do about that. I mean, look at Jesus. Not only is his heritage from way back filled with both positive and negative people, but he also, in his own current life, had to deal with the fact that his heritage was he was poor. He was from a really bad region that people, you remember what they say, is, can anything good come from Nazareth? He's not exactly from this upbeat place where everybody's like, whoa, you're from there. Good for you. That's it. He's got all of these obstacles to overcome. He also has no training. What's he trained to be? A priest? Absolutely not. A teacher? No. What would he have been trained to be? A carpenter. He has no right to be this. He's not from the right place. He doesn't have the pedigree. Not only is his genealogy just kind of iffy, but his life currently is just a little bit iffy. But if you look at the history of the Bible, of the people that God calls to use, of the people that God chooses, they are the most unlikely candidates that God uses in the most amazing ways. We look at Abram, we look at Moses, we can look even in the New Testament at somebody like Paul, and we see God taking flawed, broken people. We see God taking people that are from a heritage that in no way prepares them for what he's calling them to do. And we see them drawing lines in the sand and making marks that forever change the history of not only the world, but still affect us today. We still read about them and we're still encouraged to see them. But there isn't a single person, aside from Jesus in the Bible, that we can look at that was perfect, and that's why God called them. Here's the thing I want you to take away with that. You, just like these people, are not defined by your heritage. We are, according to Peter, in that same passage where he talks about the stone and the rock being the stumbling block. He says God... Now, let me back it up a minute. In verse 4, he says, "Come to Christ, who's the living cornerstone. He was rejected by the people, but he is precious to God who chose him." And now, God is building you as living stones into his spiritual temple. What more? You are God's holy priests who offer the spiritual sacrifices that please him because of Jesus. He says, you are, in verse 9, a chosen people, a kingdom of priests, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's very special possession. A royal priesthood. I want you to go back with me a little while to the earlier part of the Bible. When the tribes of Israel were coming into their land, they doled out different parcels of land, different amount of this, different amount of that. This was their inheritance. Do you remember what was the priest's inheritance? It was God. The Lord, it says, yourself in Leviticus will be your inheritance. You're not to have a share in all the other things, because the Lord will be your inheritance. Listen, when we are born again, we become the adopted sons and daughters of God. We no longer have the right, nor do we have the obligation to claim our earthly inheritance. If you're still living according to the heritage of your family, if you're still living according to all of those things, if you're bound by the family's belief, bound by the family's lifestyle choices, by their decisions, by their patterns that they've built into their lives, by addictions, by abuse, then you are living in a whole different kind of bondage. And the only way to escape bondage is to be set free, to break out, to stand up to the lies that so easily deceive, or like the writer of Hebrews says, the sins that so easily entangle. And to look to Jesus, the author, the perfecter of our faith, but even more, the author and the perfecter of our life. We have to learn to live beyond the sin, beyond the abuses, beyond whatever it is in our families, in our heritage, beyond all of that, beyond the family name, beyond the roadblocks, beyond the safety and the support of the things that we know or the things that generations have known. And step out in faith, just like Gideon did. Yeah, hesitant, right, and afraid, absolutely. But he did it, right? I mean, it's kind of like Peter when we see that story of Peter walking on the water. The Lord tells him, come. And he says, okay. And it doesn't say how many, but it's not very many steps he makes. And he sinks. But guess what? He walked on water longer than anybody else ever had. What's holding you back? Throw away the family tree. Be great. Be grafted onto a new root system, a new vine. I have no doubt that it's not only for many, many other reasons, but one of the big reasons Jesus is described, he says, I am the vine, is because if he's the vine, what does he say we are? The branches. Right? That's our heritage. That's our inheritance. That's our family tree. That's our life now. If you look back at something Jesus tells to some people that are wanting to follow him, that are wanting to be grafted into his life, into his family tree, that are wanting to become his disciples. This is in Luke chapter 9 that says, as they were walking along, someone says to Jesus, I will follow you no matter where you go. And what does Jesus say? Foxes have dens, birds have nests, but I, the Son of Man, have no home of my own, not even a place to lay my head. Again, I'm going back to F.F. Bruce for a minute, and he says, this is what he's essentially saying. If you cast your lot with me, you'll join the ranks of the dispossessed. You'll have no home with the priests anymore. No home with the Pharisees. You can't go back to that place, but Lord, you may even be an outcast from your family. It sounds bad. But if the situation or the inheritance, if that's corrupt, if it's harmful, if it's going to prevent you from taking that step, if it's that stumbling block, if there's something there that's preventing you from going on the path that God has called you to, then this is really a blessing. You're set free. No longer trapped in the expectations of others. No longer trapped by what other people say you are or what you believe you are about yourself. You see, generational sin, that kind of family kind of sin, can act very much like chains, and we can feel trapped. You have no choice, and like you're destined to do blank. We build off what we're taught, right? Well, we have these inherited beliefs. Maybe it's addictions, maybe it's attitudes, whatever it is. But you don't have to be a product of your family tree. You don't have to be what everyone expects you to be or be what everybody thinks you are. Gideon's proof of that. His dad was proof of that. Your heritage does not have to define you. In fact, with God, we are adopted into a new heritage with Christ. We no longer have to live up to our family's expectations, to our family's beliefs about who we are. We have to live up to his. And if that feels daunting, and if that feels a little scary, and feels a little overwhelming, join the group. Yeah, it does feel daunting, and it feels really scary. I don't know about you, sometimes it's much easier to live up to the expectations of my family, especially if they're low, than it is to live up to God's expectations of me. But look at Gideon. I mean, how does God see him? Greetings, mighty warrior. The Lord is with you. What does God expect him to do? Rescue Israel. But how does his family see him? Weakest, lowest. What do they expect of him? How does he see himself? What does he expect of himself? And see, at this point, Gideon must choose. You see, it's not just trying to be a little better than your parents or the previous generation. It's a total break with tradition, expectation, and inheritance, or at least it was for Gideon. Now, I don't know, your story may be different. In your story, there may not need to be some kind of break with your family tradition. If you have a tradition that supports the calling that God has put on your life, that's there and is backing you up and is walking with you, if you have a family that prepared you for the life that God wanted you to lead, don't break with that tradition. That's not what I'm trying to say. But if you're in that situation where it is a barrier, then you may need to do this. It doesn't mean you have to be in that situation. It just means that you might be in that situation. But we all have things that stand in the way in that path. And when God calls us, He calls us not to just keep traveling the same path we're on, just a little bit better. That's not what He says. I mean, if that's all it took, if all you had to do was just keep living your life exactly the same way you're living it, doing everything the same way you're doing, just have a little bit more focus on God, it would be the easiest thing in the world. Of course you would. Why would you not? That's not what God calls us to do. He doesn't just say, man, you're killing it out there. Just keep doing it. Just exactly the same. You don't need to do anything different. You're awesome. God says you're awesome, but it's not because your life's perfect. He's calling us off of that path on something that's a little different. And some of you have walked with the Lord for years and years and years, and you're far down that path. Some of you are just getting started on that path. Some of you may not have even made that decision to step off on that path. Wherever you are, God is calling for you to make some significant change, to make some significant difference in your life, something that will be noticed, something that might get the mob out after you. But this is the beginning of Gideon's path. It's the establishment of his kind of building on this foundation of the Lord and not on his family heritage. And he's done it for all the people to see. And what was the result? What was the result of that public profession of faith, of that drawing the line in the sand, so to speak? He not only finds the support of his earthly father, but he finds the support of his heavenly father. And as so often happens with the significant events in the Bible, he's given a new name, Jerubbaal. Do you remember? At the very end, it says, let Baal defend himself. Think Abram. Think Sarai. Think Saul. From that point forward, he's a changed man. A man who is now beginning, albeit very hesitantly, I will admit, to walk in the path that God has set before him. Breaking with tradition, stepping out in faith, and choosing not to be identified by his family, his friends' expectations. And these were critical steps in the process. Greater challenges were ahead of him. But he now knows who he is. More importantly, he knows who God is. So here's what I want you to take away. Doesn't matter where you've come from. It only matters where you're going and with whom you choose to cast your lot. Breaking with tradition can be scary. Being divided from your friends and your family and an old way of life can be very hard. But it's a necessary step in becoming the mighty warrior that God's called you to be. Whether that's in the arena of your house, your job, your school, or like we're going to see with Gideon, an army. So here's the practical step. I want you to think one thing, just as we close up here, as we're praying, as we're finishing up, think of one thing that you've inherited that's been passed down through your family that feels like it holds you back, that feels like it hinders you, like it's an obstacle or that it binds you from fully living out the life that God has chosen you for. And as we're praying for you and with you, we want to pray that God will move you through and past those places. You see, we all have battles to fight. Whatever's holding you back, whatever's binding you, know that in Christ, we are, as it says, more than conquerors. Whatever's in your past is not as important as what's in your future. These things don't disqualify you. Instead, you're qualified by Christ, by His family heritage, His blessing, His strength, whatever the challenge, we can break free. We can overcome any obstacle and begin our journey of transformation from hesitant to hero, to what God has called us to be. Remember, the scriptures are still being written in your life and in my life. God's still living. He's still active. He's still intersecting at every moment, every point along the way in our lives. So we have to make a choice to start living in that reality. Let's pray. God, as we come to you and just in humility realize that even your Son can't claim to have this perfect earthly heritage. That, Lord, you don't call the perfect, you don't call the qualified, you don't call the strong and the sure of themselves. You call us. You call regular people. And you ask us to do extraordinary things. And God, we will admit that sometimes that's scary. And it's hard. And it seems unbelievable. And we think a lot of times maybe you've got the wrong person. But God, I pray for each one here now that they would hear your words, that they would hear your truth, and that they would be able to stand not on the foundation that's been laid before, but on the foundation that you have laid, that they would be able to stand up on you and know that you have us. You are with us. You are strong where we are weak. So God, would you just build us and encourage us now.